We're shorthanded today, so we're experiencing technical difficulties. So now I got to get it back on my belt. Okay, and don't look. Okay. Let's go back to what I intended to say. If you're visiting with us, thank you very much. Please come back in spite of the preacher. Join us again on another Sunday. We've got visitors from the community. We got kids who are no longer kids, who are adults, who are back here visiting with us, and it is great to have. I love seeing our children come back home even when they're grown. And so if you're visiting with us, thank you so much for being here. We're honored that you are with us. I want to tell you about a couple things. One is to remind you, if you have little kids, you may already know about this. This is the children's worship bulletin that goes hopefully with whatever we preach on. It's been pretty easy for Michael to find these in relation to all the miracles, because lots of miracle stories got cool things online. But these are out for your kids. In fact, often Monday morning I will pick up one of them and I'll look through it and do it myself, and sometimes I think I missed a spot in my sermon. So if you have little kids, they are on this back table right here by the Home Point Center. Grab those for your kids when you come in, and if you need one, I'll set this one down here in front of Lyndall and you can send somebody up to grab it. The second thing that kind of goes with that is kids have always been important to us. The most about this church is how we respond to our kids. We have got a great program called Journeyland that runs on Sunday mornings during the school year. And so it will start again here in a couple of months. But in the meantime, we do a little stopgap curriculum during the summer, because summers are hard to get consistency. And we need some teachers who will help with that. So interested in some form or fashion in helping with our children's program, if you will contact Deona Santos, or if you will reach out to the office, we will get you lined up to help. We're kind of short in the midst of this summer run, and reopening post-pandemic has proven a little bit difficult. So if you are good with kids and you are a blessing to them, or if you got your own kids in there, maybe it'd be a good time to see what's going on in our children's classes. So contact the office if you are willing to help, and we'll have more on Journeyland in the coming weeks, and ways we can enlist you to help, because Journeyland takes a village. It's not a huge commitment, but it takes a number of people to do it. And so we will look forward to talking about that in a few weeks. Okay, I think I got all my announcements. You've heard me talk about my grandfather, maybe more than any character in my life, partly because I look like him and I act like him, and other than coming to Jesus a whole lot earlier, we have a lot of similarities. And I always used to love hearing my grandfather tell stories. And he would often tell stories from his perspective, but then at times he would tell stories from his parents' perspective. And so let me give you one of the stories about his parents. So my great-grandparents went from Germany pre-World War I to a little spot in Russia that became known as White Russia. And if you're much into history, you'll know things come out of White Russia. But my great-grandparents fled Germany to go to White Russia, and then they found that they weren't liked anymore in White Russia than they were in... Michael, I'm just going to move to the back. They weren't liked anymore in White Russia than they were in Germany, and so they moved again. And the second move was from White Russia, so I guess that'd be the western side of Russia, across the Atlantic Ocean to America. They got to Ellis Island, and as my great-grandfather walked through Ellis Island, they said, "Please change your name, because you won't be liked here because you're German." Again, this is pre-World War I. News is already out that Germany is not the greatest place on the world. And so my great-grandfather, shortened his name from something I can't really pronounce to Moore. And then they went to a small town there on the east coast of New York. After finding out that that wasn't their home either, they became a family in exile. Now really, they had been a family in exile for the past 15 years, from Germany to White Russia, and then from White Russia all the way to Ellis Island, and from Ellis Island, from community to community, trying to find a place where they could live, trying to find a place where they could just be people. And not be considered Germans, or not be considered White Russians, or not be considered something crazy from a part of the world that was kind of self-destructing at that moment. And they had a lot of trouble finding their place. In fact, they migrated from place to place as they made their way west, and they found the further west they went, the more it didn't matter that they were German, and it didn't matter that they had fled the countries. It just mattered they were hard workers. And so they settled in a little town outside of Denver to be farmers, and they ran into another German couple that oddly enough had done the same thing a few years earlier and had managed to buy land. And there those two families met, and what's intriguing is my grandfather will marry the daughter of one of that other family, and that's the lineage that eventually gets to my mom and then gets to me. They were people who were exiled. They were people who had no home for a long time. They were people who were trying to figure out how you find your place in a world where you don't speak the language and in a world that you don't know. The story we're going to talk about this morning is, I think, a story of exile. It is the story of a group of 10 who, my guess is, have wandered along as that group has been together. And there were probably moments when that group was more than 10, and there are probably going to be moments when that group might have been less than 10. And there were people that were added because it was this exiled community of lepers. And so just hear the story this morning. Here is what Jesus is recorded for doing. On the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance. And they lifted up their voices, saying, "Master Jesus, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourself to the priests." And as they were cleansed, then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. We'll come back to that line. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise, go your way. Your faith has made you well." Now that's a story we've probably told other times. That's a story we maybe have referred to at Thanksgiving, or that's a story we might have taught our kids within Journeyland as we teach them about Jesus and about being grateful and about healing that he brings. And it's a story that probably most of us know, but it's a story of a group of 10 that have no place, that have no home. They're a band of leopard men, and they're a band of brothers. And for whatever reason, they have come to this point where they have either heard or someone has acknowledged, or they're just hoping that they can run into this fellow named Jesus. And so that's exactly what they do. And as Michael talked about last week, you had lepers who were not allowed to be within the community. They were exiled. They were put outside. They weren't allowed to walk on the same street. They had to holler out that they were unclean, and you had to go through all of this. And so here comes this group of 10 invading the city, so to speak, or at least where they are, and they want to see Jesus. And in this band of very unmarried men is even a Samaritan. Because even though at least 9 of those guys appear to be of Jewish heritage, one is a Samaritan, but even their religious bonds aren't as important as the fact that they've got leprosy and they're exiles. And so this group of 9 Jewish lepers and 1 Samaritan leper comes to Jesus. And what's interesting is Jesus heals them, really, I think, before they ask. And he says, "You go and show yourself to the priests." And only one comes back. See, that's always bothered me. It's always bothered me because I hope I'm someone who goes out of my way to say thank you, whether it's to family or to friends or to people who do nice things to me. I think that's an important characteristic that God's people ought to have. And these men are all healed from something that has exiled them for most of their lives. And yet only one comes. Sometimes we fail to give thanks because we become distracted. I don't know what's going on in their lives. I don't know how excited they are to get back home. I imagine their excitement is great, but Jesus heals them, and he says, and only one comes back. Why only one? Why does only one come back to acknowledge the miracle that has been done? Why does only one come back to then bow at the feet of Jesus and give him thanks and then give him praise for what he's done? And are we any better? Because often we get distracted. My guess is this group doesn't give thanks to Jesus because they got busy looking forward to their new lives. Now think about it. If you've been in this little leper colony that's been wandering around hoping something good might happen to you or the day that you might die, and suddenly you are healed and Jesus says, you go do what the law says, you go to the priest and get declared clean, I've got a lot of catching up to do. I think about moments in my life when I have traveled and I've been gone maybe a week or two, and I get back to the office and my desk is full of mail and my email is full of correspondence that needs to be done, and I've got 20 messages on the phone that need to be answered, and I think I've got some work to do. And my guess is these guys are saying I've got some work to do because they've been separated from family. They've been separated from parents, or separated from spouse, or separated from their children, separated from their community, separated from everything they might have known. And so my guess is they leave excited just to get stuff done and get back to normal. Do we do the same thing? Do we see some great blessing that comes from God, where God does something that is beyond our wildest imagination, or even stuff that isn't beyond our imagination, that we simply asked for, that He then gives us, and yet we forget to say thanks? What's interesting is the one who comes back to say thanks is, oddly enough, the one in the group that shouldn't get it, at least according to the Jews. Because the Samaritans, their religious practices would be a little goofy. And they would be a little off, and they would be a little disenfranchised from their Jewish kind of cousins, so to speak. But yet he's the one, and he receives a gift, and he comes back to the feet of Jesus. And by the end of the day, I wonder what the former Samaritan leper is thinking. That by the end of the day, I wonder if he has gone from the perspective of Jesus being a healer to Jesus being a redeemer. Because there's an interesting story in the midst of that story. Maybe the other nine thought they deserved it. Maybe the other nine are saying, we're Jewish and we're heritage and we're God's people, and so you owe us this, or whatever they might have been thinking. But only one comes back thankful. Let me ask you a hard question for a second. Which do you do more of? Do you do more giving thanks, or do you do more griping? Do you do more giving thanks about what God has done and how God has blessed you and how God has changed you and how God has answered the prayers that you have brought to His throne? Or do you do like maybe too many of us do, and a little frustrated under our breath, saying, God, I sure wish you would fix this. God, I sure wish I've asked you this 10 times and you still haven't fixed it. I've prayed for this and you're still, I've done. Instead of realizing all that God has done, and be grateful. So how should we act? I think there are a couple things that jump out of this story that remind me of how we should act. The first thing is, no matter what the blessing or how small it may seem, we need to be like King David. Okay, now this is one of my favorite parts of Scripture that King David ever writes. Let's just read it. Then King David went in and sat before the Lord and said, "Who am I, O Lord God, and what is my house that you have brought me thus far? And yet this was a small thing in your eyes, O God. You have spoken also to your servant's house for a great while to come, and this is instruction for mankind, O Lord God. And what more can David say to you? For you know your servant, O Lord God. Because of your promise, and according to your own heart, you have brought about this greatness to make your servant know it." Now what's interesting is not once in that little hymn of praise does David say thanks. But I don't know about you, but I read thanksgiving all through that. That I read David saying, and David is looking at the time where he's been anointed and he's king and he's going through all this stuff, and he's wondering, why am I the one in this place? Why has God chosen my family to rule His nation? And yet it is full of praise and it is full of thankfulness. And David will use that phrase in verse 18 that says, "Who am I to deserve this?" When was the last time you said that phrase? When was the last time you sat at your dinner table with your family and you said, "Who am I to deserve this?" When was the last time you walked through your front door and you said, "Who am I to deserve this?" When was the last time you walked through these church doors and said, who am I to deserve this? See, because I think what David is doing is David is going through something similar to what at least the Samaritan leper goes through. The Samaritan leper is probably thinking, who am I to deserve this? I'm not Jewish. I'm not from their line. Neither is Jesus, but yet he heals me anyway. Who am I to deserve this? See, our expression of God has got to be one that contains gratefulness. Because if we look back, we see all that he's done. See, here's what I can look back on. I can look back to when I was 14. And when I was 14, my dad preached a sermon, and they sang, I am resolved no longer to linger. And I walked down the front pew, and I sat on there and said, Dad, I think I'd like to be baptized. And he quizzed me. That's kind of what we did back then. He quizzed me and asked me a bunch of questions, and I got an A+ on the test. And then my dad said, let's do this. I'm proud of you. And that's when my thankfulness to God should have started. See, because it was from that moment forward that I've realized all that God has done, and I realized how God has moved in my life and how he's changed things and how he's opened doors and he's shut doors and he's let me fall and he's let me fail and he's let me succeed and he's let me do all of these things in the midst of all of my prayers that go up that sometimes are way too selfish. And far too often, he's not been greeted with thank you. That far too often, instead of being greeted with a thank you in the midst of a prayer, he's greeted with another request. Well, you got that one done. How about something new? My expressions to God need to be full of heartfelt gratitude. So how do we do it? I think we start expressing our gratitude by first learning a lesson from the Samaritan. And that is, we adore him. Okay, my favorite visionary scene in this story is when the Samaritan leper comes back. Remember what he does? He falls on his face at Jesus' feet, and he gives thanks. What a scene. To me, that must have been a powerful, teachable moment that Jesus maybe didn't even need to do any teaching on because it was witnessed by all of those around. But here's the Samaritan, and he falls at the feet of Jesus, and he starts worshiping. And I think we need to do the same thing. That part of our greatest expressions of gratitude are going to be moments of worship and moments of time when we gather around a Lord's table or moments when we sing the great hymns of the church or moments when we hear stories about God's people and responding to him, moments that bring our adoration. Because it's in our adoration that we remember his power. And it's in this adoration that we remember his greatness. And it's in this midst of adoring him that we realize all that he has done for all of our years to make up for those things that we failed on. And maybe it should cause us, not maybe, it should cause us to fall on our face and be grateful. David writes this in Psalm 100. He says, make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and bless his name. For the Lord is good. Notice how he ends. For the Lord is good. The steadfast love endures forever. Praise our God. See, that's how it ought to be. When we enter his gates, with thanksgiving and praise. We come into a place like this. And again, you've heard me say the house of God is not brick and mortar. The house of God is so much more than that. But when we come together as a people of God, we enter his gates with thanksgiving and praise for all that he has done. Now, what I have noticed is that the ungrateful spend very little time in worship. They spend more time fussing. They spend very little time singing praises to God. They spend very little time on their knees. They spend very little time adoring the one who has done everything for them. Instead, they just grump. And I think we need to hear a lesson from Jesus and hear a lesson from a Samaritan leper. But not only do we adore him, but then we submit to him. The idea of the leper falling on his knees is, in that culture, a great act of submission. It is not only an act of worship, it is an act of saying, I will live humbly before you. See, when we look at all that God has done, when we look at all the blessings that God has brought into our life, when we look into all the prayers that He has answered, when we see all the good that He has done to those around us, we ought to be reminded to walk and to live humbly before the Lord. Because those who walk humbly before the Lord then do everything Jesus asks. I wished we knew more of the Samaritan leper's story. So the Samaritan leper, he comes back, he says thank you, he falls on his knees, he worships, he submits, he gets up, and Jesus says, rise and go. I wonder what the Samaritan leper did the rest of his life. I'm guessing he was the best preacher in their town because he was grateful. He had realized that someone greater than him had touched him. Someone had not only healed him physically, but maybe he even figures out there's an implication of spiritual healing as well. And my guess is he has got a story to tell. Don't you love to hear those kind of stories? You get those stories of those who made it through cancer when they should have died. Or those that were literally on the brink of having to file bankruptcy and a job opens up. Or those who were 5 seconds past an accident that could have killed them. Or those who, and you could fill in 1,000 different blanks, and they've got a story to tell, and they don't mind sitting over a cup of coffee and saying, let me give you the story of how God healed, or how God cured, or how God brought rain, or how God fixed our marriage, or how God filled in whatever blanks you think need to be filled in. And they're better preachers than I am, because they've got a story to tell. So my call to you this morning is to be the one. To be the one who, when God touches you, to be the one for when God heals or God forgives or God does whatever it is He plans and has done to you, to be the one that goes out and not only says thank you, but who then has got a story to tell. Verse 19 reads like this. And he said to him, rise and go your way, for your faith has made you well. How's your faith? How's your faith in God? How's your faith in the Son? How's your faith of what He has done and what He will do? And if it is strong, then here is my call. Be the one and rise and go. Because no one can tell your story like you can. No one can tell how God has changed you better than you. Start off by praising and thanking Him, and then take that story to a world that needs to hear it. Okay, Kent has got a song that we're going to sing a couple verses of. If you have any needs, Michael is at the back. I will be at the front. Elders are scattered all through the room and will be at all the doors as you leave. If you need the prayers of the church, if you just need someone to say thank you to and communicate that to God, I know these people in this room will do exactly that for you. If you need something, let us know as we stand and as we sing.